It's a funny place to be, stuck in a seemingly mundane world with an inner knowing that the universe is so much more than our mortal minds can comprehend. Yet we all have the capacity to know peace and our oneness with the wholeness of life. And through these interviews, discussions, and reflections, it is my intention to share this possibility. I'm Ryan Kurzak, and this is the Kriya Yoga Podcast. A lot could be said about Paramahansa Yogananda. He's the teacher of Roy Eugene Davis. He's also the teacher of Oliver Black and Swami Kriyananda, all individuals who were ordained and authorized by Paramahansa Yogananda to carry on the teaching tradition above and beyond Yogananda's own organization. And that organization that Yogananda created and brought forth was Self-Realization Fellowship. His most well-known work, his most well-known writing, which just about anyone interested in yoga and meditation knows about, is Autobiography of a Yogi. And it's in this text that he discusses his early childhood. He discusses all those times that he sought out saints and sages and yogis and mystics and what he learned from them, as well as the fantastic experiences that he had with them. And that is a wonderful, inspirational text that helps draw many people into the spiritual path. But ultimately, the value of that text isn't necessarily in how fantastic the spiritual stories are. The value of that text is in the morals behind those stories. When you read Autobiography of a Yogi, it is perfectly fine to be inspired by that work, but the ultimate value of it is to read behind the lines, to contemplate when Yogananda met with a saint or mystic, what was it that he was learning? What did that interaction, what spiritual lesson or teaching was it meant to share? That's one of the most powerful ways to utilize that book, Autobiography of a Yogi. Now, Yogananda was born on January 5th, 1893, at Gorakhpur in northeastern India. He was the second son and fourth child of Bhagavati Charan and Guru Ghosh. Both of his parents were Kriya Yoga practitioners, and both of them were devoted students of Lahiri Mahasaya, and his given name at birth was Mukundalal. Now, at the age of one, Yogananda's parents brought him to Lahiri Mahasaya, and Lahiri Mahasaya baptized him. And at that time, Lahiri had told Yogananda's parents that Yogananda would be a great spiritual engine, leading many back to God. And Yogananda discusses his earliest childhood experiences, one of them being conscious in the womb itself, and then later as a youth, as a toddler, before he could even walk or speak, being conscious of wanting to say things, of understanding language, but the body wouldn't respond, and knowing how to walk, but the body again couldn't quite respond yet. And Yogananda also said that he was able to remember several previous incarnations as a yogi. And so this kind of increased awareness as a child is often significant, indicating that one has spent a good deal of time, if we consider the theory of past lives, meditating and being a yogi and developing their consciousness. Around the age of 12, Yogananda retired to the attic meditation room of his family home in Calcutta. And during that meditation, he was absorbed in samadhi for 48 hours. So at the age of 12, it is said that he was absorbed in samadhi for 48 hours. And during that interlude, he relates that he saw the manifestation and dissolution of the universe and experienced a variety of superconscious states. And when he would lecture about this in his later years, he would often refer to that as my 48 hours in eternity. The thing I wonder about that is, did his parents know he was upstairs absorbed in samadhi? Were they concerned about the fact that they couldn't find him? But I suppose if you're going to be lost somewhere, then samadhi is the best place to be. Paramahansa's life was dedicated towards the teaching and dissemination of Kriya Yoga in the West. He informed the disciples that his mission was to make known the philosophy of Kriya Yoga. And he would also share that it was Babaji's intention that Yogananda come to the West to fulfill this mission. Babaji, again, as we know from our previous discussion on these Kriya Yoga gurus, he also inspired Lahiri Mahasaya to teach Kriya Yoga to householders, whereas before, these Kriya Yoga practices were reserved for essentially solitary aesthetics. Individuals who retired, retreated from the world to give themselves fully to the practice of meditation and God realization. So we see that Babaji incrementally allowed Lahiri Mahasaya to teach in such a way that was different than the previous tradition. And then in time, Lahiri Mahasaya trained Sri Yukteswar, who trained Paramahansa Yogananda. Eventually, Babaji had the intention that Paramahansa Yogananda travel to the West and make the teachings more public, to be more outward. Now, when we think about Paramahansa Yogananda and his work, it can be sometimes controversial. There are individuals who say that he watered down the techniques. There are individuals that say he did not teach the pure Kriya Yoga. There are individuals that take issue with the fact that he gave large classes and that he worked more often on a quantity level rather than a quality level. Because ideally, the interaction between teacher and student is deeply personal. And while you can go to seminars and learn techniques to train your mind and consciousness, the real work often requires an interpersonal interaction with an experienced individual who's already mastered their states of consciousness, mastered their emotions, mastered their meditation techniques. But we always have to put this into context. If it wasn't for Yogananda coming to the West and teaching the way he did, meditation and yoga would not be so widely accepted today. It would not be so prevalent in our current consciousness. Yogananda would always say that he did both quality and quantity work, that he loved getting together with sincere individuals and speaking with them privately. But he also recognized that by sharing the information publicly, he was essentially sowing the seeds of Kriya Yoga in the mind of humanity's consciousness so that it could take deeper hold, so that it could be something more accessible to more people. And so while no public work can be perfect in relationship to its capacity to help individuals develop, it does have value. In the same way that even now, the way technology is, we can reach people across the globe in an instant. Teachers can offer classes online or through these podcasts and reach thousands, if not millions, of people. And of course, a lot of, as we might call, spiritual shoppers will check in and listen. But there will only be a few that hear what's being said and decide to commit to a more dedicated practice. But even those individuals who we consider to be spiritual shoppers, by simply being introduced to more authentic spiritual ideals, again, that helps to sow the seeds in their consciousness such that when the time comes and they're ready to deepen their practice, it's already there, ready to sprout. And then they can find the proper avenue for themselves to access the knowledge they need to meditate well and to practice yoga well. Now, many people often treat Yogananda as though he was something special, as though what he knew, what he understood, what he was able to comprehend through meditation, as though that is not accessible to everyone. It's very common to deify a teacher, especially if we can't fully understand what the teacher was sharing. But Yogananda, he didn't just wake up one morning and had this capacity to meditate well, to be disciplined, to do the hard work that he did to bring yoga and meditation to the West. Sure, in the beginning as a child, he had a wonderful drawl towards spirituality, a natural inclination, a natural interest towards it. In the same way that a master violinist might have a natural drawl towards music, but the master violinist doesn't become a master violinist unless that master violinist practices 8 hours a day and dedicates his or her life to the study of their music. The same is true of Paramahansa Yogananda. If he had not meditated as often as he did, if he had not found Swami Sri Yukteswar and put through that strict discipline that Sri Yukteswar embodied, he would not have had the same kinds of experiences, impact, and spiritual state of clarity that he did. Luckily, Sri Yukteswar was an excellent teacher for Yogananda. He helped to balance out Yogananda, whereas Yogananda was extremely devotional, and as a child, probably more prone to whims and over-emotionalism, Sri Yukteswar was practical. Sri Yukteswar was a hard worker. Sri Yukteswar essentially embodied the ideas of discipline. And it was this emphasis of Sri Yukteswar's which allowed Yogananda to become what he did, spiritually speaking. Now, Yogananda assisted his guru, Swami Sri Yukteswar, organizing ashrams, and they founded a residential boys' school for the purpose of providing education to children, and with the idea of a balanced approach to education, with an emphasis on Vedic philosophy and yoga practice. It said one time that while Yogananda was at this school in Ranchi, that he had a vision in which he saw a vast number of people, and he intuitively knew them to be disciples he would meet in America. Now, not too long after that, a few days later, he received an invitation to speak at a Congress of Religious Liberals to convene in Boston. Now, his parents were not poor. They were well off. And because of the general financial assistance of his father, he was able to travel to America by boat and remain after the conference was concluded. Now, before he left India to come to America, Paramahansa Yogananda prayed for Babaji's blessing. And the story goes that Babaji came to his house to assure Yogananda that his mission was divinely ordained and would be successful. And Babaji told Yogananda that Kriya Yoga, the natural way of God realization, will ultimately spread in all lands and aid in the harmonizing of the nations through humanity's personal, transcendental perception of the infinite. Now again, let's be aware here that we're talking about yoga in general. We're talking about the philosophy and the techniques of yoga that lead to higher awareness and spiritual clarity. Of course, these days with this particular tradition, we do refer to it as Kriya Yoga. And one of the reasons that's the case is because before Yogananda left to come to America, Sri Yukteswar told Yogananda to teach yoga, through the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, basing the teaching off of the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. And that text, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the second chapter itself is entitled Kriya Yoga. And Kriya is related to the word karma and means action. And so essentially, Kriya Yoga is any action which clarifies our awareness, uplifts our consciousness, allows us to know and experience what we are related to the wholeness of life, and eventually results in full liberation of our consciousness. So anything that we do can be considered Kriya Yoga if it functions towards that end. Now, when Yogananda was in Boston, he taught classes and he met his first American students. And not long after, he toured many major cities within America, speaking to large audiences and initiating thousands of truth seekers into Kriya Yoga practices. Wherever he went, he was hosted by civic and business leaders. And when he was in Washington, D.C., giving a lecture series there, President Calvin Coolidge welcomed him to the White House. Now, Yogananda knew that in America, he had to adapt. He had to learn to communicate in ways such that he could share both the quantity and the quality message. He was always interested in educating new people, but he was always attentive to recognizing those sincere students whom he could really work with on a quality level. And I've seen that again and again, even with my own teacher, Mr. Davis, participating in I don't know how many retreats, large group retreats at Center for Spiritual Awareness with Mr. Davis. I would see many people come and go. And over the years, every now and then, one or two I would see repeatedly, hanging around, spending time, learning. But most of the people that came in, they didn't come back very often. And that's often because there can be an interest in inner work. But very few people have the discipline or the direction to really sink their time and attention to something worthwhile, because most of the time, even spiritually inclined individuals, their minds are scattered. They're distracted. They want to jump from one thing to another. So I saw this in my own teacher's work. Those few individuals that returned year after year learned from him and continued to grow into their own spiritual maturity. And then I saw the other individuals that would come and go as their interests would eventually wane and wax. Now, during one of Yogananda's most successful lecture series in Los Angeles, he began looking for a property to establish a permanent headquarters. While he was visiting Highland Park, the Highland Park District, he saw a hilltop estate. And on this estate, there was a hotel that had 60 rooms. It had a panoramic view of Los Angeles. And he walked onto the property and exclaimed that this place feels like ours. But the companions that he was with, they tried to dissuade him. They pointed out that there was no signs, no indication that the property was for sale. Eventually, upon inquiry, they found out that the property actually was for sale. So Yogananda set himself to raising the funds, and through generous friends and students, they were able to move forward with the negotiations, and it is this site that remains as the international headquarters of the Self-Realization Fellowship. Now, 1935 to 1936, Sri Yukteswar bestowed upon Yogananda the further monastic title of Paramahansa. So he wasn't always Paramahansa Yogananda. It wasn't until 1936 that this occurred. During this time in India, he consolidated his organizational activities, visited ashrams, held public meetings in India, and he gathered more information for his writings. When he returned to America, he was presented with the Hermitage at Encinitas in California. And this was a gift of one of his disciples, Mr. James Lynn, Rajasi Janakananda. It overlooked the Pacific Ocean. It had lush flower gardens and lawns, and became the favorite place for Yogananda and many of his close students. In the early 1940s, two churches were founded, one in Hollywood and one in San Diego. And Paramahansa Yogananda, he would alternate Sunday lecture services between these two churches. Now, as the California work progressed, printed lessons were published, and these were sent to thousands of students in America and other countries. And then the book that we've discussed before, Autobiography of a Yogi, this was first published in 1946. And again, as of this current recording, over 4 million copies of this work have been created. It's available in more than 17 major languages. Now, it's estimated that Yogananda initiated well over 100,000 people into Kriya Yoga during his 32-year ministry. And millions of others have benefited by his works, by his books, by his own organization, Self-Realization Fellowship, and the teachers there, which carry on his ideals. Now, in 1950, Paramahansa retired from public activities and secluded himself in his desert retreat, which was at 29 Palms in California. He still met with disciples, and he was writing an extensive commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. Now, Mr. Davis would visit him there, and Mr. Davis would relate plenty of stories about chatting with Yogananda, walking with him around the grounds, sitting with him in the living room, essentially communing with his teacher. And on one of those occasions, one of those evenings, as Yogananda sat in a large reclining chair, he told Mr. Davis, "I finished the Gita today," meaning he finished his commentary on the Gita. And then after a pause, he said, "Just a little while ago, I was here meditating. I saw a golden circle of light in the spiritual eye. Opening my eyes, I saw the light up there." And he pointed to a place high on the wall in front of him. And he said that Babaji, Lahiri, and Sri Yukteswar appeared in that light, smiling their blessings, and that they were pleased. Now, you can read quite a bit more about Mr. Davis's experiences with Yogananda, also learning about Mr. Davis and learning about Yogananda, in Roy Eugene Davis's book, Paramahansa Yogananda As I Knew Him, Experiences and Reflections of a Disciple. But one of those stories, during his last visit with Paramahansa Yogananda, before Yogananda's Mahasamadhi, Yogananda counseled Roy, "Don't allow your mind to be influenced by anything anyone says. Don't look back or to the left or to the right, but look straight ahead, and that you must go all the way on the spiritual path in this incarnation, and you can." He also told Roy about his feelings about Sri Yukteswar's own passing, his Mahasamadhi in 1936, and he hinted at his own soon passing. It was on March 7, 1952, that Yogananda left his body. Mr. Davis relates that he was at Self-Realization Fellowship Center in Phoenix, where he was an assistant minister with Herbert Fried, and that Herbert telephoned Mr. Davis and informed him that Master had left his body tonight. And Herbert then instructed Mr. Davis to conduct a memorial service for students in Phoenix. And then a few days later, Mr. Davis returned to Los Angeles for the official memorial service. Now, before Yogananda passed, in the months preceding, he had confided to several disciples that his mission had been successfully accomplished. He confided to them that his organization, Self-Realization Fellowship, was established on a firm basis, and that he had prepared his successors to represent the Kriya Yoga tradition. So he had prepared those individuals that would carry on the lineage of enlightenment. He had prepared them well, so he had accomplished his mission. Now, on March 7th, the day that he passed, he was attending a dinner arranged in honor of India's ambassador to the United States, Binay Ranjan Sen. After a short talk, Paramahansa quoted one of his poems, lifted his eyes, and left his body. And years before, he had said to some disciples that when I go, I want to go with my boots on, speaking of God and the masters. And that's essentially what he did. He continued his work up until his very last breath. And with the people I've known who have been or seemed utterly sincere on their spiritual path, they often did the same thing. Until the very last day or until the very last moment, they were either working or they were continuing to remain as clear as possible. There's just a sense of life within them that continues up until the very end, I've noticed. Now, after the funeral service at Self-Realization Fellowship, Yogananda's body was taken to Forest Lawn Memorial Park to await placement in a crypt. Some representatives of the India branch of his organization had communicated their intention to travel to Los Angeles to view Yogananda's body a final time. So 3 weeks later, an official of the mortuary sent a notarized letter to Self-Realization Fellowship stating, "The absence of any visual signs of decay offers the most extraordinary case in our experience." Now, years before, a few disciples had witnessed Yogananda's one of his ecstatic states. And Paramahansa Yogananda told them, "The same energy or shakti you see manifesting today will keep my body intact after I am gone." And that's essentially what happened. So he assured disciples before he passed that his teachings and spiritual influence would continue, benefiting seekers of truth for centuries. And to those who asked about the future of their relationship with them, he said, "If you think me near, I will be near." And Yogananda's work continues, even into our current time, because of the strength of his will and dedication and his capacity to build such a solid organization, as well as to train other teacher representatives of the Kriya Yoga tradition to persist through time, as well as to keep the practices viable for each new generation. And with the advent of technology, books, lectures, writings, all of this will be available for years to come. So it's a wonderful thing to consider Yogananda's life and to consider what he was able to accomplish and how that has allowed us to come to where we are today, to be able to learn these techniques, to be able to study meditation, to practice yoga, and for this to be a valid approach to spirituality for those of us who live in the West and have a profound interest in Eastern philosophies, but even more than that, have an interest in the unification of all philosophies into what's been called the perennial wisdom, that underlying current, that underlying wisdom, which threads through all authentic enlightenment traditions.
This episode of the Kriya Yoga podcast was made possible by donations from Kriya Yoga apprenticeship students and supporters of our Patreon community at www.patreon.com/KriyaYoga.